When I joined up, I was 27. You see, I was really a man. And all the pals that went with me were from Altofts, Castleford, Ollerton Bywater, Rothwell and Carlton, and then a few from Leeds. We landed down at Chatham from Pontefract Barracks, and with a fortnight's intensive training. And then after that, we got a weekend leave, and then we was off to France. In 3 weeks, I was in the front line. And we started driving saps, because the Germans was doing it, that found that out.
Driving saps, what do you mean?
Well, there was tunnelling underground towards our trenches, you see. And so we had to counteract it, so we had to tunnel from ours to theirs and blow their mines up and stop them from coming any further.
There must have been always a danger of you going through your tunnel and meeting them
underground. It did happen once, but not with our company. But I know a friend of mine that was in another company, it did happen with those. And they met straight dead on. But that was it wasn't on the Somme, it was more up towards Ypres and Vimy Ridge. Anyhow, we had a lot of men killed, you know, blown up and that. I reckon it up on an average, 1 in 4 was killed in our company. I'm not including the staff like at the headquarters, away from the trenches like and all that. I'm just mean the men that went up.
Your company being a company of sappers? Or
that's right, yeah. Company of sappers. Yeah. When we went up, we did 12 hours a day and 12 hours at night. So one section of 12 with the NCO used to go up and do 12 hours, then the other ones would go and relieve them, and they'd do 12 hours. And then at the weekend, we used to have to work a sharp shift to turn over so that you'd been up all night this week at nights, and then the others had been up all day, during day. So then you'd change over, then you'd be there all night, you see. And when you were driving these saps, you see, what used to happen, to get the material out, it was put into sandbags, it was all chalk on the Somme as it happened. So that meant to say it was like rubble when you got it to fill in the bags. And they used to be about 20 or 30 infantrymen come to the headquarters, and they'd load them up with 50 bags each, probably of sandbags or timber, for timbering the thing up as you went on, you see, to keep yourself safe in case it collapsed then, but it never collapsed like only be shells. And then when they got there into the trenches, they used to pass the bags up. And then if we were on the night turn sort of thing, when it'd be dark, well, I'd get over onto the top and I'd find a decent shell hole. Of course, there always plenty about. And I'd say, come up, boy, get two or three of these chaps up and get them on the top. And then it started passing all the bags up. It had been filled during the day first, you see. It had been stacked all alongside inside. And then when they'd gotten master of those, then you used to be going up, what were you doing, you see. And, of course, if it was raining, you say, chucking it down around, a bit of coal, they'd give up and they'd come down. And if I'd gone down into the sap, like, to see how my men were going on, what's up? No bugs going up. Anyhow, I'd go up, and when I go up, they'd all be just inside the entrance, sheltering out of the rain, or anywhere where there's probably a couple of corrugated sheets of corrugated iron across the trench, and they'd be under there and having a smoke. Hey, come on, let's have these on. Well, then I used to have to get up again. And I said, come on, chuck them up to me. Well, it meant that when I got one, I had to walk 2 or 3 yards probably before I could get it into that shallow. So I said, oh, I can't catch them from there. You come. And I'd get 2 or 3, but when I got them up again, then I said, now then, if you do feel that, well, there's another big one over there. So I said, drop them in there. And then before daylight, next morning, they used to just spread soil over them. See, with it being chalk, when it rained, it used to show whiteness on the bags.
Oh, yeah.
And the Germans, they could tell, you see. And then another thing, when you went over, you used to see the infantry that were holding the line, which see the officer, and he'd say, have you got any patrols going out? Probably 2 o'clock in the morning. And then if there was, they'd say, the password is so-and-so. Well, then that password were our password. You see, if a chap is on sentry there, about 2 or 3 yards round the corner, and you're over on the top, he could mistake you for Germans. Their patrol up and out. Seeing the fire on you. Oh, yes, it was a bit queer. You're always in between two fires. Anyhow, after 9 months, preparing 9 months, we had it blown once or twice, and we lost a good few men. And then when the fatal day came for the 1st of July, these fatigue men, they call them fatigue, you see, infantrymen when they come in, well, they were bringing probably a box of ammunition. Well, there would be 14-pound boxes. It took 3 weeks to get 30 ton in. See, we made a big chamber at the far end, and it was just short of the line, German line. And then we filled all the chamber with it, and then opened some boxes and put fuses in and what we call primers and that, so as there'd be no mistake, it'd go off. When the actual morning came, I had to take charge of the, what we call another shop, which was Mary Dowd, and the other one was in Maxim Street. And my job then was, when I went in and relieved out a section it was in, we had to wait until about 6:30 on the 1st of July, you see, because we went on at night, you see. We went on at 6 o'clock, rather, that morning, because we were changing over, you see. We should have gone on at 12, but when we changed over, we went on at 6. And therefore, we had to take all the structure down where we'd made this chamber at the far end, so that the trench mortar gunners could come down under cover and get into this chamber and fix the gun, and they could fire while the attack was on into the second line of the Germans to stop reinforcements coming up to help to stop them, you see, because you couldn't be shelling so near between your own lines with your own guns, you see, because you'd be killing your own men, you see. And when it got to about 6:30, we'd got it all levelled off, all in sort of apple pie order. So we went back up the trench, and it was all left gaping open at that end. And I said, drum some tea up. So we drunk some tea up and all that. And we all had a smoke, most of us smoked clay pipes at that time, little short clay pipes. I just walked round the service, about 2 or 3 yards, and I could hear the boys chatting, the infantrymen were waiting, getting ready for going over, and they'd had a breakfast, and I said, hello, I said, what are you doing? I said, are you swapping knives? He said, no, I said, no. Well, but they was writing their addresses out, and then he'd give it to his pal, and then his pal had given me his address. So if anything happened to either of them, any of them was safe, they'd let the parents know, you see. It had either been wounded or it'd been killed, you see, before it got into the papers or anything. Anyhow, one boy said to me, you're only a boy, what we call a schoolboy today. He didn't look no more than 16, so he said, have you got a piece of paper, Corporal? I said, yes, why? He said, I want to write mine. So I used to keep a diary. So I got my diary out. So I said, it was all wrote in code, you see. So I says, write it on that back page. And he wrote his name and address on. Well, I didn't take any notice of it, So when he wrote it out, he didn't tear it out. He gave it to me to tear out, you see. So when I come to tear it out for him, I just noticed at the bottom, And he'd put in his name and address above, but I didn't notice that. I didn't take any notice of it because the bottom of it shook me. And it says, goodbye, Mum and Dad. Jack. And tears were rolling down his cheeks while he was writing it out. And I've often wondered if ever those tears got dry before he was killed. And I still remember it.